Next presenter, Dr. Dennis Nielsen. She's a senior scientist at Agriculture Agri-Food Canada in Summerland Station, an expert in the water and nutrient management in woody perennial crops, apples, cherry, and grapes.
Thank you and good afternoon. So for those of you who don't know, Summerland is just north, it's on the dry side of the coastal mountains in British Columbia. It's just north of Washington State, and so we're in a semi-arid environment. But this study that I'm going to talk about is actually in the lower Fraser Valley, which is on the west side of the coastal range, and is much wetter as a result. We're particularly interested in this location, and you'll see why in a minute when I describe it to you, in trying to reduce the effects of agriculture, actually, on leaching to a very vulnerable aquifer. Now, where am I? Okay. So the study location is the Abbotsford Aquifer, or Abbotsford Sumas Aquifer in British Columbia. It's a transboundary aquifer, which is why it has received so much attention from federal government scientists, because there are transboundary issues. And the flow of the aquifer, unfortunately, is from north to south. So any pollution that we basically incur in Canada can move south into Washington in the U.S. So it's a very vulnerable aquifer. It's an unconfined coarse sand and gravel aquifer, which is about 160 kilometers squared. And if you look at the graph in the lower right-hand corner, you'll see that this is the drinking water standard, the red line, and you can see that maximum nitrate-nitrogen levels are enormous under some situations. In this particular time, which was the early 1990s, we had peaks of up to 90 micrograms per liter of nitrate nitrogen in the aquifer. And this was commonly thought to be associated with large-scale renovation of raspberry fields. There was an analysis, a stable isotope analysis done on the aquifer water in the 1990s, and it was determined that much of the nitrogen was coming from manure. So you'll understand why this is the case when you look at the regional agriculture. Basically, what we have is intensive small fruit farming, raspberries, and more recently blueberries, interspersed with poultry barns. So all these are poultry barns with a very high density of poultry. And essentially, the manure from the poultry barns has been applied to the raspberry fields as a source of both nutrients and soil conditioning. The area is characterized by a dry growing season, but an extremely wet fall and winter season. And as I mentioned earlier, we have this unconfined shallow aquifer, but we have coarse soil basically sitting on top of it. So we did a series of experiments where we tried to look at changing the conventional management practices to try and understand what in fact was happening with respect to nitrogen movement into this aquifer. And so we have a range of nitrogen rates here. We looked at cover crops, we looked at irrigation management, and we looked at the applications of manure. And essentially, the irrigation, when it is done conventionally, is a fixed irrigation rate, so growers tend to start irrigating in mid-June, and they will start to apply about 1 inch of water per week, and they will do the same rate throughout the growing season. And we compared that with a fully automated scheduled irrigation to replace 100% ET. So the conventional practice is to apply somewhere between 50 and 100 kilograms of N per hectare, and that has been traditionally based on a post-season soil nitrate test. So the feeling being that if there's very little nitrate in the soil at the end of the season, whatever you'd applied that year was probably a good rate for next year. If you had some left over, then you'd applied too much, but anything that was left over would be leached out in the winter. So that was the thinking behind the post-harvest soil nitrate test. And there has always been a history of manure applications within this production system. So we compared all of our other treatments to this manure. So as you see, it was not a totally balanced design by any means. We only had the ability to put in 8 treatments, so we wanted to get the most experimental comparisons out of that experiment that we could. So we had planned comparisons between fertilised and manure at the same rate of nitrogen availability. We looked at 3 rates of nitrogen inputs, 0 versus 50 or 100 kilograms of N per hectare. In our case, we didn't base it on a soil nitrate test. We looked at nitrogen application timing and method. So we either used 2 broadcast applications, or we compared that with daily fertigation for 6 weeks. And the nitrogen source for fertilizer was urea, except for the fertigation where we used calcium nitrate. And then we had this irrigation regime that was a fixed rate every 2 days or a scheduled daily rate based on evapotranspiration. And then the conventional practice also was to till between the rows because it was perceived that any alley cover was in fact in competition with the raspberry plants. So we compared tillage versus the cover crop. We did a whole range of measurements, but the ones I'm just going to mention today are yield, nitrogen status, soil nitrogen, nitrogen losses between the root zone. In fact, most of the work I'm going to talk about is the nitrogen losses beneath the root zone. So beneath the root zone and actually between the alley, we had passive capillary wick samplers, which essentially sampled the whole of the herbicide strip width for the row and then some fraction of the alley for the alley. And these were sampled on a weekly basis and essentially collected. We were able to measure the flux of both water and nitrate in that system. So the first thing to notice is that with all of these different treatments, over the 3 years, although there was a little bit of variation, in effect, there were no significant responses to any of the treatments. So here we're adding 0 nitrogen versus 100 kilograms of N and no effect on yield for 3 years. Then we started to look at the leaching in response to management in the same time period. So the crop was 2010 to 2012. We started looking prior to crop in 2009 to 2012. So this graph compares what was happening in the alleys and what was happening in the rows. So right away we can see that in the alleys we are in fact getting a considerable amount of leaching. So where is that coming from? But also in the rows, we're getting differences in response to treatment. So the first thing to look at is that the perennial cover crop, as one would expect, greatly reduced the leaching in the alleys, and that has become a recommended practice. The greatest leaching was from the manure, both in the row and in the alley, and the lowest was in the scheduled irrigation with fertigation at 50 kilograms of N per hectare. But still, again, and just as we saw with the plant growth, we're in fact getting the same amount of nitrogen leaching from the 0 N as we're getting from the 100 kilograms of N treatment, and in fact, or more or less across the board, except for these other examples. So the next thing we wanted to look at was the seasonal distribution of leaching, because as I mentioned earlier, we had this concept that whatever was left at the end of the growing season, or it was, if there was no nitrogen left in the soil, then that meant we'd applied the right amount. And the thinking behind that was that, in fact, there was no leaching happening in the summer. And, in fact, what we saw was there was considerable amount of leaching happening in the growing season, particularly for the conventional irrigation, which was basically, as I said, the fixed irrigation rate, where we got a reduction in leaching was when we scheduled irrigation in the growing season. So once again, both growing and rainy season, manure was nitrogen was the largest supplier. The greatest reduction in nitrogen losses was in scheduled and fertigated treatment. And once again, we see that there's very little difference despite the range of nitrogen applications. So what's happening? Obviously, there's another source of nitrogen in the system, at least one more, and perhaps more than one. So if we look at the alley leaching treatment, the alley leaching in the zero N treatment, where we have the tilled soil, we get an indication of the amount of soil mineralization that is happening, and that is basically about 50 kilograms of N per hectare. So this is a very nitrogen-rich system. The well water was supplied, we were using aquifer water to irrigate, and we were supplying 60 kilograms of N per hectare with the well water. And that was in the fixed irrigation. With the zero N treatment, we have a combination then of well water and soil mineralization. When we schedule irrigation, we get quite a large reduction in the amount that's coming through the irrigation water. And if we are applying 50 kilograms of N here with scheduled irrigation, again, we get a reduction compared to the zero N treatment. So scheduling irrigation made a large difference in the losses. So the second experiment was to look at what was happening to the fertilizer that we applied in one season. So this is looking at the fate of 15N labeled fertilizer that was applied in April and May 2011. We did four destructive samplings, but in this case I'm just giving you two dates. The first date was shortly after fertigation ended, and essentially this was July the 4th, 2011. And at that point, we could basically account for between 80 and 90% of the fertilizer that had been added. Very little in the leachate, mostly in the soil, and some in the plant. By January of the following year, we can only account for between about 30 and 50% of that nitrogen. So we've lost a lot of nitrogen out of the system totally. We just looked at two treatments, fixed irrigation and scheduled irrigation, and I'll show you in a minute what happened with the leaching under those two different types of systems. So this is the fertilizer and contributions to nitrate-nitrate leaching in the year we're talking about. And this was measured over many samplings. And we can see that the total N in the fixed irrigation is much higher than the total N lost out of the scheduled irrigation. But the nitrogen contribution from the fertilizer is very small. It's between 5 and 20% of the total nitrogen lost. So what has been happened, the previous history, both the irrigation water and the soil nitrogen, having a huge effect on the nitrogen dynamics in this production system. And you can see that, in fact, a lot of it is lost before the rainy season even starts. So the third treatment, and I won't go into this in much detail, but essentially it was remedial. We basically applied four nitrogen rates, still going with our zero up to 100. We looked at scheduled irrigation, fertigation and schedule, and we looked at a manure legacy. So no nitrogen was applied here. And essentially what we find, of course, is with our perennial cover crop, we've reduced the alley leaching. We're still getting a huge amount coming from our manure legacy, and our scheduled irrigation and fertigation has the lowest treatment. So do I have time to go through the summary? Yeah, quickly? Okay. So, the summary. N management in N-rich systems is difficult, and we have to account for all those sources of N, much as growers do not want to do this. They want to be applying nitrogen every year. Perennial cover crops are obviously a good way to reduce leaching effectively. Water management is a really important factor for controlling nitrogen leaching, even in those areas that have high rainfall. And a fall nitrogen test may not be a good indicator of system nitrogen management. Manure applications are not a sustainable practice in this system, but compost may be a suitable alternative. And if we wanted to put a best management practice package together for this system, it would be perennial cover crops, scheduled irrigation, and fertigation with a low rate of N, no more than 25 kilograms of N per hectare. So thank you. Just one quick thing, I did want to mention these two students who did most of the work, Natalie Nick and Sean Kushta. Yeah. Not very. This grower group is a very conservative grower group, and they're not necessarily distinct from the poultry growing group either. You know, they're very linked. One thing that is happening is that there's a wholesale conversion to blueberries, and that's giving us an opportunity to actually change the culture a little bit.